That's the hot. Okay. We are opening with this discussion that we were having literally before we turn these mics on, because you're insane. I think you're insane. If you really, you know what? No, not. I'm saving it. I'm bottling it.
I don't think that this is that serious of a topic.
It's worth discussion because I think that's an insane opinion.
Okay.
Okay. Hold on. Here, I'm giving it to you.
Welcome back to class, everybody.
Yep.
I'm your host, Ethan. This week we've got both of us here.
Yeah, finally, right? Because, you know, holidays happen, and we want to, I like doing those episodes because I think we can, like, experiment with some interesting outlying things. Like, what do we do when it's, like, kind of our own piece? Like, the anime adjacent books one, I listened to it all the way through when I was, like using podcasts to go to sleep, and I'm like, this actually is a great topic we should revisit. Like, maybe force me to read one.
Yeah, I mean, obviously I'd be fucking down as shit to get you to read any of these, because, like, the whole, like, point of that episode is, like, a lot of these authors even say, like, they take a lot of their muse is, like, West or Eastern anime.
Yeah, right.
You know what I mean? Like, they take a lot of inspiration is the word I was looking for, literally could not find it as it was slapping me in the face. But yeah, so they take a lot of inspiration from anime. So it's like, of course, you see the same kind of tropes and themes. And, like, really, if you think about it, you know, all shonen, like, anime have some similar tropes in there. And it's like, yes, not hard to throw them into a book. You know what I mean?
Right. And it just kind of using that inspiration is kind of a hodgepodge of random, you know, pieces that could actually create something that feels a little bit newer. Speaking of literally that entire phrase, we are talking about a show actually today that it doesn't kind of fall into traditionally the anime camp, but I can't help but watch this show. While first impression of mine is good, it feels borrowed. And I want to maybe make a case on that. And not that that's a bad thing. Not that that's a bad thing. But I found that there's a lot here that's very kind of interesting. So, Ethan, what are we talking about today?
Well, today we are talking about the Immortal King.
Yes.
There's a lot of daily life. Yeah, daily life of the Immortal King. Sorry, the title is really long. Especially these Chinese ones are always, like, insanely long titles. I know that's, like, a joke for current animes.
You say that, but double down the fact that its origin is a light novel. You kind of got a double header of
a double dipper. But we also were supposed to talk about mushrooms.
You know what? At some point, I'm going to jump in with that. Because I want to get that cleared up. Maybe we can end the episode with that.
Yeah, but this show is kind of interesting because I view it a lot like Psyche K, if you ever watched that show.
Yes, I finally did watch Psyche K. That was one of the examples I was going
to
bring up.
Well, I did beg you to watch at least a little bit of that, I recalled. Yeah, and I know it was something that you didn't follow through to, like, season 5, and I also didn't do that.
Right.
So it's totally fine. But it's kind of this interesting scenario where your main character is just, like, unbelievably strong, like, super OP.
Yes.
But they're just trying to, like, not be in the limelight. Like, that's really the whole story.
That's the crux. And I mean, that in and of itself makes for and good comedy, where now I don't think I probably could have appreciated. There's a very specific style of comedy that comes from that very specific scenario that a lot of shows have played on, right? One Punch Man's got a bit of it. Psyche K's got a whole bunch of it. I would say even some of Misfit, but that one plays it pretty straight, actually.
I think, honestly, the funniest kind of juxtaposition is One Punch Man.
Yeah.
Because he's super OP, but he's so OP that he can't stand out because it's like he defeats everything so fast that they're like, must not have been strong then.
There's another part that I think is actually more like One Punch Man, but it's to that end is like just setting the stage, because, like, we're about to go into, I think, a lot of comparisons. We have, like Ethan said, a character named Wang Ling, and he is literally a walking magical nuclear bomb that is, like, a weapon of mass destruction and could end the world, essentially, in, like, him snapping his finger accidentally too hard and just kind of whoopsie. So he's kind of walking around trying to live a normal life. in no small part to his, who I think are severely underrated, his parents.
Yeah, they're honestly some of my favorite characters. They get super, like, low screen time as the seasons go on.
But they feel so, like, such natural characters. Dad's always just chilling on the couch in a wife beater, and he's got, like, he clearly's got money, and he's really good at what he does, because his wife is always like, I want to buy that, and he's like, all right, just take my fucking credit card, I don't care.
So I've seen all the way to, like, current right now. I'm not really sure what he does. There's something that is a little bit tough in all Chinese anime, quote unquote, where it's like the plot is a little bit hard to follow in every single one I've ever watched. Like, we talked about that show earlier. It was like, Thank God or whatever.
Yes, it was. I remember the show. I got like halfway through it.
Right.
The subtitle. I think that was the subtitle's fault a bit.
Yeah, yeah.
This one, again, there's going to be a lot of weird shit about this show, honestly. It is on every fucking streaming platform.
Yeah.
Funny, crunchy, Netflix. I watched it on Netflix, and it was pristine subtitles. I felt like it was actually pretty easy to follow because of that. But I want, like you said, it's a Dong Ha. It's a Chinese anime. It's, I never would have expected that a show like this is getting that much, like, kind of like sleeper love from like every platform. And I looked, that is made by Howliner Animation League, who has done 67 works. Holy shit. This, and they all look good. Like, they all look like aesthetically great from what I'm seeing.
Yeah, what's interesting to me though is like it's initially hosted on Bilibili, which is the Chinese version of all of these like streaming platforms.
One stream to rule them all. Yeah.
But it's interesting because all the like Bilibili like bumpers and stuff like that are still in the in the show.
Oh no, they look, they're producing the OG and they're getting all that animation cred. It's like what Crunchyroll did with and Webtoons did with God of High School. They slathered it everywhere.
Slapped it all over the place.
Sorry, back, little tangent, but back to the parents. My theory, because of his dad's skill, I think he works in some kind of like magic tech. Like division or a company.
I think that is true.
Okay, because that's my hunch. It has to be, right?
So it's weird, and like, I don't know. This is just my opinion of Chinese anime in general. Is like, they're very quick on storylines. There's not long arcs, particularly. It's like, especially right now in the show, the season three, they're doing like half an episode is one story, half the episode is another story. They're like, they like double tap.
That's some Pokemon level shit.
It's
that's
pretty like, sick.
It's honestly two stories. Okay, do you find that that's a good question though? Because at least from what I caught from season one, possibly season two, I watched 15.
Yeah, season one.
Okay, season one. It at least felt a little bit more traditionally akin. It had, you know, multi episode arcs when it felt right. It had like that kind of one episodic feel. Do you feel that having two stories kind of in per episode like that kind of leads it towards slice of life comedy more and things like the intent? Because I kind of liked it when it leaned towards that shonen, but that's shonen trash brain.
Well, so here's what I think they're doing. They go toward like overall arcs. Like 15 is actually the longest season they've had so far.
Okay, interesting. All
season
right.
two was only like 10 episodes. It was like a weird number. But it was like only one arc.
Oh.
They threw in like some like fun storylines, but it was like all one arc.
Fascinating.
And then in season three, it seems like they didn't like potentially know where it was going, maybe. And so like every episode they're like, for instance, this is like not really spoilers because it is such a small part of the story anyway.
Okay, fair enough.
There's like an overarching arc.
Overarching arch.
Yeah,
I like it.
That is a bad set of words.
hard to mix.
Where there's like, okay, this girl is trying to take over this town or whatever, okay?
Got it.
But then they'd be like, oh, the beginning of this episode, we're playing Pokemon. There's all these like these spiritual beasts, you know, all around the world, and people are all these like you see Birdie Tang too, like catching them.
Okay.
Yeah, you see all these people like trying to catch them and stuff, and they end up catching this like this unicorn that shouldn't even exist on this world, this like legendary creature. And, you know, it's like all about.
That's the one I was up here with you watching that one scene.
Yeah, yeah.
I was out of context. anime in any form, no matter how much of a veteran you are, is always fucking wild. Yeah. Like, imagine if on the spot, like, what's going on right here? Oh, okay, so, like, it's kind of like Pokemon, but this guy's, like, super powerful, and they're trying to catch him, but it's, like, not really important at all.
Yeah.
And it's just like, what? They care so much about this dying unicorn. Like, what the fuck?
I think that's what's kind of interesting about this main character, Ling Ling, which is what his mom calls him.
Yeah, Ling Ling. That's very cute.
And then I think also Sun Rung calls him that sometimes too.
Also adorable. I have notes on her for sure. But
he's interesting because he's got like a big heart actually.
Oh yeah.
He like, and you don't know quite as much yet, obviously, but he like genuinely cares about a lot of these characters that are like seemingly peripheral characters.
I mean, you get a glimpse of that a bit in, you know, season one. He's not heartless. His power is not completely devoiding him of any humanity.
But he's got this like disaffected, like entire, like sort of ambiance, like at all times.
Yeah.
Aura, because of how ridiculously strong he is. Like if he had like wild emotions, like he would just be like accidentally murdering, you know, half the planet, that kind of thing.
Bing, bing, Mob Psycho 100, continue.
A lot like that.
Right.
A lot, Psyche K does the same thing where he's very disaffected.
Yeah, and for everyone else's benefit.
Right.
Like you have to be calm and still. I think one of the interesting subversions they did, it's just something we've seen in the past, is that, like we were mentioning about his dad puts a temporary, but obviously must be pretty powerful amulet on him that does the suppressing of both. And to his parents' dismay and kind of a bit of anguish, they're like, we kind of stole this from him, but we understood how powerful this kid is. So
what's kind of interesting, because sometimes his mom acts like she doesn't know why he's acting so like disaffected. She like occasionally acts like, I wish he would like be a normal kid. And I'm like, you guys are literally
depressing him. So, but and that's the
thing. It's like when you put your kids on Ritalin, and then you're like,
why are they zombies?
Yeah, why are they such zombies?
How they have a 4 or 5 GPA somehow, though?
Because you're fucking drugging the shit out of them.
Out of your kids. But here's the part where I think that might be a little bit okay. Is the mom is probably saying, I wish I had a normal kid. Some of those comments were like a little out of pocket on her end. Like,
out of pocket.
You fucking know why he can't be like this. But did they really have, in their eyes, any choice? World-ending calamity level, child power level, and the trade-off, sadly, has to be his emotions, and he's like, stupid even keel. I love the Ritalin comparison here is very, very real. It keeps him kind of locked down, his energy is tight, and his emotions are that of a zombie on Quaaludes. Just kind of...
Right.
Just nothing upstairs. But it's not true. Not nothing. He does have compassion that we see. Like, he does give a shit, and he's not, like, a mean guy. He has a good time hanging with his friends in a lot of ways. Which you can call like Gong Ho and is it Cheng Cheo or
they call him Chief Cheng all the time.
I'm fucking owning Chief Cheng.
And so I found out evidently in like China and Korea, if you're like the number one person in the class, you're called Chief for whatever reason.
You called Chief. Yeah. Chief Cheng. He was super talented though. Like, granted.
Well, he's got like a super rich family, a super like illustrious family.
Oh yeah, like he's from one of those like purebloods.
Yeah, it's kind of like one of the sacred 17 or 27 or whatever from Harry Potter.
The sacred 17.
Yes,
is there like the top like wizard families in history? Or
they're
like
supposed to be the only like purebred families, like only purebloods.
Oh man,
where like both parents are purebloods, so the kid is also pureblood. So
yeah,
there was a list posted. This is like all Pottermore shit.
That's amazing.
But there was a list posted of like last names of wizarding nice families that were like still pure.
Oh, so it's basically like there's a dating app called The League where you have to like pay and apply to get in.
Uriah.
Done right here. Yeah. Right. You have to pay to apply and prove your pedigree. To even be able to swipe right, you got to be able to do that. Wow.
Kinda.
Nothing gets me going more than a magical eugenics tangent.
Well, it's sort of like, you know, Malfoy.
The Malfoy fam, they're nice. They all kind of remind me of the 86 race, with the silver haired. there. But yeah, where the fuck were we on that one?
I think we're just kind of off.
We walked off that path. We're in the woods somewhere now. Yes, we were talking about Chief Chang. The other characters in the show, I will say that they're shockingly fun. I think their interaction is probably better than I thought it was going to be when it first started, because I felt tropey, but then they just worked well together, I think.
Yeah, I think a lot of times it's tough. So like we said, our main character is obscenely strong, but it's kind of hard to get your like supporting cast to not realize that at some points.
Yeah.
But I think they do it in like a genuine enough way in this show to where it's not like, all right, dude, he just like killed an entire world in front of you. How did you not notice that? They do like an okay job, I feel like.
Maybe I will save that big example I have right along those lines a little bit later when we're in the spoiler city. But to your point, yes, that is kind of one of the things, right? Is that like, how did these people in like One Punch Man and stuff just not see it? Like, it's clear. It's evident. But I think that's kind of where the trope lies, is like, it's so beyond your understanding of powerful that
right.
You Occam's razor your way from it. Like,
you're like, well, that can't happen.
Either this kid is a god incarnate or this other thing that makes more sense happened. Then they just like, I think in the face of that and a lot of those shows, that's where a lot of the humor comes from. And maybe a bit of just the narrative edging, just because like somebody fucking look at this kid in the face. Like, what are you? Just understand.
Well, he does like an okay job, I think, of like hiding it still, because he does like, he like really flexes when nobody's watching for real, or he waits till the absolute last moment to where it's like, if I don't do something, all my friends are gonna die.
Yeah, right. I'll deal with it later. And right there, there's like a loose sense of justice there for right. him. So I don't know. Him as a character, again, thought he'd be kind of flat, but.
And he almost sort of still is.
Yeah, but is he flat because of the writing, or is he flat because of, he's basically flat because of the narrative, not in spite of it, right? He's kind of muted, and we saw what happens kind of near the end of season one where, you know, all bets are off, he's unfucking chained, and it was rad to watch, but.
Right, yeah, I do think, like, season one does the best of showing that, like.
Yeah, okay.
The like reason essentially that he is so like, I don't know, muted.
Yeah, right.
That's actually like a great word for him. But like overall, the storyline from season one that I really liked is like, it's your typical shonen. You go to your like magic school.
Boom.
You get tested.
You got force value, baby.
Yeah, you get placed in like a class.
They literally, and no pretense here, from class ordinary to class elite. You know where the fuck you stand at this school.
Yeah, buddy.
What class are you? Ordinary? Oh.
Yeah.
Deuces.
Catch you later. It's like in a regular magic high school. It's called Weeds and I think Flowers or something.
It's some plant-based bullshit. But that.
But the bad class is Weeds.
Weeds.
Like, Jesus.
Yeah. Like, at least that one has a semblance of kind of like tongue-in-cheek. Nope. Not in this school. Not in this fucking school.
You suck.
Yeah. Literally pipe down, you peewee baby boy, or absolute Giga Chad.
Yes,
we
sir.
Already
Whatever
have
you
all
say,
the,
sir.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. I'm sir and you are, well, actually weed. Weed's not bad. I think weed's actually pretty scathing. And you know, and it, again, all like the shonen affairs here, like Ethan said, the force value stuff is pretty hard set. I mean, it's a good way to like gauge, though I'm a bit annoyed at the trope we've seen lately of like someone so powerful that the measurements can't be like read. Counterpoint to what I think one of the best power level showings like that has ever been done in the Majin Buu saga of Dragon Ball Z, when all the fighters are like just trying to
like tap the punching machine as like,
and they're already
as
higher
they possibly can.
And higher than anyone's ever gone with that, and they basically to the point, what does it look like when a machine malfunctions? It fucking breaks because you punch it so hard. Boom, Vegeta ends it. Like, that scene is one of the best, I think, like, power testing tropes
I've ever seen.
It's
hilarious.
It's incredible because everyone's like,
Hercule coming up. He's like, oh, yeah, 197. Yeah. His own daughter, like, I think blows it way out of, like, destroys his score two, and they're like, this can't be right.
Yeah, no, we've changed the machine like seven times. They're seeing a score that is impossible, but it's not completely like it's not question mark. Like that kind of feels a little blah. So I remember seeing it's one of the big season one. I'm like, all right, I mean,
I think it's like episode one.
I think it's little one or two. Yeah. So, but in any case, right, he just basically just, and actually though, the way they do that test is super fucking awesome.
Yeah,
it gets to
cool.
One of my favorite characters in this entire show. I guess, is it lore time? I think it might be lore time.
I mean, it's This is hard to talk about without talking about lore a little bit.
You're going to have to talk a little bit of lore. And it's not really a spoiler because we kind of learned all this information in the first two episodes.
Yeah.
Honestly. So,
I don't think anything that happens in episode one or two can be counted as a spoiler.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, I might put my foot down on that and formalize that. If it's in the first two eps, it's not a spoiler.
It's free fucking game because it's within.
It's free fucking real estate.
It's yeah,
honestly.
It's in the religion of three anyway.
Right. It's that period where kind of everything's all...
You have to watch it, so...
You have to watch it. And these episodes are short. But long ago, there was a... not that long ago in a single lifetime. There was an attack. There are these magical beasts that do exist in the world. Some of them are a lot more... rambunctious is a cute way to say calamitous, I guess. Then basically one of these called the Giant Toad King, Giant Toad, or something like that. Giant Toad King. We're gonna go with that. And
so he's a demon.
He's just straight up fucking demon.
Yeah.
Well, oh shit. Well, stakes just got raised right now. And there was a very powerful, still known to this day, kind of magic. What do they call them? They're like magic soldiers.
Yeah, the Seven Stars.
The Seven, is that it? Okay, yeah. So was he one of them at the time? His name is Zhao Yi.
Yeah.
And
so I just got the entire backstory right now in season three.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
Yeah, so
I'm only have a season one perspective. Yeah, yeah, I don't, because that, look at us working together, constructive, no spoilers. yeah, it turns out that this Wang Ling was not only there, literally clapped casually the giant frog king demon into oblivion, but Zhao Li got all the credit to the point where he's like a living idol, like a living right. legend. One, this is the exact One Piece corollary I was going to make. This is king. This is what
one
that
punch is. Punch Man.
What did I say?
One Piece.
I do it all the time. One Punch Man. King is that for Saitama. Like, he's kind of the surrogate. Everyone thinks it's King, or everyone else thinks it's another hero. It's a really funny trope. I don't think that's ever going to go stale for me.
I think yes, but with one very important difference is that Ling Ling does not want the credit, whereas Saitama does want the credit.
He's, I guess, inherently on his hero path. He needs the credit. Like, yeah, he's not going anywhere if he doesn't have credit. So, fair enough. And also, King, I don't know if the manga kind of supports this quite yet. There's rumors of it, but he's powerless. He's a wimpy baby boy. Zhao Li is not actually kind of a fucking badass in his own right, right? we don't see him because he's basically administering the school. And if you haven't seen it yet, then...
So okay. He's like essentially like a detective for the city they live in.
Is that why he has the fucking hairstyle where it looks like a monocle magnifying glass over his eye?
I don't know if that's why it's like that.
Should it be?
I think it certainly makes sense.
I think it should. I think it is. It's canon now.
But this is what... I'm glad that you're a little confused because it is a very confusing kind of... I don't know if Chinese like anime writers just struggle with like world building... But I notice, like, because I've actually watched quite a few at this point.
Okay.
You never really get a good grasp of what the fuck's going on. Like with that one we talked about, Thank You, Dear Great Lord, or whatever the fuck it was.
Yes.
I could never quite tell what the hell was going on in this. Like, there was like a government versus like outsider battle going on, and I could never quite tell what was going on. And I'm glad you couldn't quite tell what was going on with the Seven Stars either, because I couldn't until season three when I got like an absolute full picture.
Okay.
But it's like, it shouldn't take 30 episodes for you to get the full picture of like the city like officials.
Yeah, that's fair.
And then
doesn't sound like they're being sneaky either by keeping that information concealed, right? Like,
but it's not supposed to be concealed. That's,
okay.
That's the thing that's like wild to me is like once they finally like unleashed the beast, as it were, later on, like it's finally like, yeah, they're the police force. And it's like, okay, well, that would have been nice to know in episode one.
That would have taken literally an extra half of a sentence. Like,
yeah.
Here are these people, the police force of our steer city.
Well, because like that's why it makes sense that he was like floating around on his sword looking for people that Froggy 2 was fucking up.
Gotcha. Oh, so maybe he isn't actually that potent of a guy. He just was good enough for, I guess, the police force. I don't know.
It was like his first day on the job.
Fucking, okay, yeah. That's awesome. Yeah. That's funny. That's funny. So more correlations. But to your point, honestly, I think I'm starting to turn my opinion. Because at first, that Thank Dearest God show, whatever, the subtitles were bad. So I assumed that, all right, hold on, okay, pass. We'll get a pass here. It was not very well adapted subtitle-wise. Now that I'm kind of outlining the story for not just them, but you again as well, there's no excuse. I watch it on Netflix, who has an entire teams of people who do these subtitlings and translations. And even with the most perfect conveyance of the ideas, they still felt weird. Like, I'm missing things. I'm missing pieces, and I don't know why.
Yeah, so that, I mean, I think this is really like the whole point of what I wanted to get into with this show is... I know we've been jumping around on plot a lot, and frankly, that's how it is.
It's kind of how it feels to watch it now that I'm thinking about it.
This is kind of what I was going to try to dive into, and we talked about it a little bit earlier when I brought up what happened in season two when they went like weirdly off model, and they tried a bunch of different like animation techniques in one episode where you went from like they added tessellation and all this stuff, right?
Yeah.
So okay. What I find really interesting about this show in particular is they're really willing to like try different stuff, even if it's like, let's try a half of a episode is a Pokemon episode. And so it's like, you don't have to endure like a whole arc of it, but it's like, they still get to have fun and try something new. They get to incorporate something potentially that could be like a fun thing moving forward. They're like, they had this, this whole idea where like, it was like cultivator monsters or whatever. And like they would have like battles
in Cultivator monsters.
They were having battles in the courtyard and shit. And right. Then it like didn't go anywhere because it was freaking stupid. But like being willing to try shit like that, I still think is really important, especially for these like IPs where I'm kind of struggling to figure out where I'm going with this because Chinese companies in general don't give a fuck about IP.
No, they do not. That is one thing. They are more than happy to parody all day.
Like, it feels fun that they're willing to just, like, do whatever. Like, they're, like, a blatant Pokemon ripoff or a blatant Jujutsu Kaisen ripoff later. Like, they just, like, rip shit off, and it's like, okay.
Cool.
You know what I mean? Like, there's nothing you can do about it, and they still just, like, have fun.
I mean, that's the kind of, one, I think that's kind of the element of parody, being able to do it when it's clear. One, I don't know what that would kind of look like in Chinese law when it comes to stuff like that. I know that as long as it is to a reasonable audience, this looks like a parody of a work of an actual IP with enough differences, you can then be on the safe side of that canyon. But I will say that, to respond, because it is interesting how they're willing to try different shit, not just in visual format or the actual narratives, but these kind of the structure, right? Mini arcs, an entire season that's an arc, two separate stories per ep. I'm wondering, and maybe this is true or not, it's more speculation, do maybe some of these Chinese animation studios have more to maybe try and prove on an international stage or try to stand out in a sea of what is Japanese control of the animation space from an international standpoint? Do you feel they have to try a bunch, see what sticks? You know, 67 is not a lot. And that was not a long time frame for that studio to get those out. So, and they were not Alito Films. They were not following like, this is our groove and we're going to do it. That's not what that looked like. Got me thinking, to your point. I wonder, is this a shotgun approach for this studio to be recognized?
Well, considering when they had season one on every platform.
Yeah.
And they didn't go like super wild crazy in season one. Like season two, three, it gets kind of bonkers.
Yeah, okay.
I thought honestly just season one was just like a really solid story.
It was great.
I mean, the world building was kind of dog shit, but other than that, like really, really solid. I really liked the like budding romance between Sun Rong and Ling Ling.
Yes. And she's basically not really tsundere, but kind of like that, you know, I'm top of the class kind of type A perfectionist, Kaguya-sama level shit. Like that's kind of, she seems like a
she really
archetype
is
of that.
Essentially Kaguya.
Yeah, right. She's got like that sneaky background. Like I'm going to get them to fucking like me.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
She literally is so, like kind of cool with bribery there for a bit to try to get elected, which is fine.
She did mind control.
I was going to give her the benefit of the doubt, but it was fucking mind control.
It was more than bribery. It was mind control.
I'm gonna bribe your wallet, then bribe your mind.
Yeah.
Coerced. But yeah, so I mean, she's a fun character. Again, that sort of element there makes me think, you know, there's so many archetypes here of things we've seen, characters we've seen written, story beats that kind of play out the same. I would like to find out when the light novel came out, because I'd be curious to see how much of that is adhered to, or how much of this is borrowed for a community it knows it's trying to build itself for. I think this was targeted at the international anime community. It didn't feel so off the wall that it was just, you know, really niche for a group, right?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely has like Chinese specific cultivation stuff, because I've noticed the star thing is really important in a lot of different Chinese IP. I don't know. Honestly, it's complete news to me that that's important in like their, I don't know.
Mythos, I guess. Yeah.
But, you know, that seems pretty interesting. And then I don't know if the sword thing is like the sword spirit thing, if that's like a specific mythos.
I would hazard to guess, yeah. And I mean, that has to be. It's so ubiquitous to the show's narrative. Yeah. And it seems like everyone, oh, you have your family's ancestral spiritual sword.
Right, like that kind of shit.
You don't see that too often in Japanese narratives, but I feel like the representation of sword and like family and identity is pretty popular in Chinese stories. There is one like Land of Ice and Fog or something like that, or like the Five Elements. It's a really badass short animation story. Very sword heavy and very identified, like fire has this kind of sword and ice has this kind of sword, you know. A lot of elemental stuff too. You notice that they have a different kind of setting of the elements, quote unquote, that I think it's like fire, water, stone, wood, and metal.
I did not notice that.
You see it a lot in like other Chinese narratives or like things from Korean or Chinese origin, that is their five like main core elements. In Japan, it's, you know, earth, wind, water, fire, lightning. That's a real thing.
Or air.
Wind, air. Yeah. Like that's a big deal. So I mean, like, I've noticed that difference across them all. It's little things too. You just pick them up as you go. Yeah. But God, that fucking tournament, man. That was such a good, tight, fun, like, battle kind of arc. One of the better I've seen in a long time, I'll be dead honest.
Yeah, but I mean, so I think if you are a fan of, like, traditional shonen tropes, they still do have those. Like, they still play the game.
They do this, like, the
school tournament thing that always happens. So they're, like, trying to do the high school kind of life thing and then the tournament. And then they add like the battle tournament in there at the end, but like they also take it up like a bajillion notches to where there's this situation at the end where there's like this terrorist organization that's trying to fuck with shit all
again,
at the same time.
Really, really on the side for a while. Yeah. And then it just suddenly becomes the problem, and it didn't feel very organic, but at that moment, I didn't give a shit. I knew all the pieces were here for some awesome showdown
shit.
Yeah,
I mean, it was just cool. I think every fight is just phenomenal.
Incredibly done. Yeah.
But then it like takes like a very, frankly, dark turn where like everybody that the main character cares about dies.
Every single person.
Yeah, and so he has to go into like God mode to just basically fix everything that's happened, but it essentially erases a bunch of time.
Yeah, okay, hold on. One prerequisite before we talk about this, because it's the most wild fucking shit I have watched in a long time. Remember that giant toad we were talking about before? Not getting into too much. The way they measured force value was hitting that toad that's in captivity, and Wang Ling freed it, essentially, and knocked it on its ass. And then it became a Shiba?
Yeah.
It became a Shiba to blend in, and it was not, what's the word I'm looking for? Subtle. It was not subtle. That is a frog dog. That is a fucking frog dog. There's no way around it.
Well, they also named him Froggy 2.
Froggy, literally Froggy 2. And everyone knew it, right?
Yeah.
I think everyone was like, yeah, that's the frog. Shit. All right. Cool. And no one questioned that shit either. Why do you have this thing that was a calamity to our city 20 years ago as a fucking pet? You fucking animal.
Well, so the principal is like very strong guy. he's actually a legendary like guy.
That makes a lot of sense now, actually. Yeah. Again.
So that's why he was under the school. There's also like
just fucking bury this demon where the children are. That seems
great there's plan. Like this insane prison under the school.
Yes, they did mention that a couple times, and I saw it.
And it gets even more insane in season 2.
Fuck yeah. So why I bring that up is because this frog does have one pretty unique ability that I don't even think Wang Ling might have. Is not that it matters in a second, but he can stop time. He can actually stop time, and that doesn't seem like it has a time limit. But I don't know. So zooming back up, we have Froggy 2, aka Lil Doggy Time Machine, and then you have Wang Ling, who has lost everyone he's ever cared about, and basically they freeze time indefinitely, and then he is basically unchained at this point, and it's like, what else to do than to merge his space power with his frog's time power and create a new world that he's the center of to try to find. Okay, now I've lost myself. Why did he do that? Why? What was the end game of that maneuver? Making a new reality? Was he trying to like find a new world to hop to?
He made a lot of realities and she kept dying.
Oh, he pulled a fucking Steins Gate.
Yes.
Oh, got it. Okay, got it.
So it was essentially like inevitable that this girl would die because of like a sequence of events.
She's a nexus point. That's right. What she is, yeah.
And so, I mean, this is like spoiler shit, but it's just so fun to watch that this is not really spoiling anything.
And this is season 1. From what it sounds like, they really just go kind of balls to the wall later, so we're not even giving you the worst of it, I think.
But it's I think actually the most important part of this whole season is what we're talking about right now.
It is.
We're not like, I don't know. Like, I don't think this is something that's spoilable, frankly. But it's like, it's essentially, it brings all of the emotion that we've been lacking the entire season and balls it up into the last episode.
That's fair. And that's a good point, because that's kind of canonically with Wang Ling's situation would be exactly what would happen, right? His amulet's gone, his emotions are out, and his powers are unbound. So he then feels everything when he does
right,
everything.
But it's kind of a situation where it's like, he's had all these friendships. He's had this like girlfriend essentially through the season, and he's basically got to make this choice. Like, he can keep her, and then he has to lose all the progress he's made like in his life. It's essentially like if Mob did like some wild shit,
he would have to
revert back to basically not having Reagan as a friend, having no friends in the body improvement club, having no like progression, but he like would save the world. It's essentially what Ling Ling had to do. It's like a very martyr moment, which, you know, I love
your
that
thing.
Shit.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's kind of similar to fucking Steins Gate too, right? You basically go back to a point where no one remembers who the hell you are.
Yeah.
And then that's the sacrifices.
Or it's like Spider-Man.
Or it's like fucking
No Man Home or whatever. No Way Home.
No Way Home? No Way Home.
Where like everybody has to forget about him.
That's right. Yeah. Was that a spoiler?
I don't give a fuck.
That's not our world.
I'm unhinged, bitch.
I am amuletless. I am emotion bound and power unbound. So, I mean, again, it's something that just kept coming up. And I don't know if that's necessarily a bad thing. And it might be an argument that I've seen what people have made. Like, it's reductive, which I actually haven't seen anyone use seriously in about 4 years, which good for me, I guess. I don't want to be around that, but it's derivative.
Yeah.
Oh, shit. I mean, that's what those words exist for, right? They basically are saying everything about this is so borrowed that it's not worth to stand on its own legs. But other people would argue it took the best parts of the shows that inspired them and then put them in a novel way with enough kind of injected creativity and originality where it now is something different. But I guess those people would also say there's nothing new under the sun. So, I mean, everything's kind of borrowed from something. I don't know if that's so. Is it necessarily a bad thing that all of these things, I think, are borrowed from something else?
So I think it is an interesting question. Can you make a show that's essentially just all tropes and like all storylines from other shows, and can it still be good? I think it's interesting because like Psyche K does a lot of the same stuff, but there was something about it that was like not as good as this show. Like, I think it all comes down to how fun is it to watch.
Yeah, yeah. And I think the definition of that fun is a show like Psyche K, and maybe why I can speak to why the big reason it fell off for me, it felt really one trick pony in the way that the comedy was happening. It was the same shit every time with a different kind of flavor.
Yeah, no, like it, his mom and dad wanting to bang the whole time. And
yeah, like that is just, okay, that's one big pipe of the same joke they're hitting.
All right, let's not talk about his dad's pipe.
I'm not talking about his pipe. I'm talking about the pipe in which one his mom and dad bang in. Yeah, yeah, there's that pipe. Yeah, and the rest of it, the big A story is something about Psyche K's crazy psychic powers are about to make this like a wacky scenario, and how do we overcome that? And that's what it feels like for a very long majority. Like, we're hitting the same slice of the same shit over and over again. A show like this, though, it leaned into the comedy, sure, but then when it got time to, maybe, I don't know if you watched all the way through Psyche K, this is a question I need to pause real quick to ask. Does Psyche K do the serious moments? Maybe the multi-arc, multi-episode, like, okay, shit just got real moments.
I watched a lot of it, and I don't recall any, but this was also a lot of years ago. I don't know. I think this conversation kind of is like, also, what about, like, an unbelievably OP character would still make a show enjoyable? And I think you've got to have a character that, like, does not want to be OP, but just happens to be. You know what I mean?
That is a huge element of it. And that's one, I think that's one way of doing it.
Yeah. 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 Because I was going to say the other option is like the One Punch Man version where he's like very OP but gets no like shine.
I did say this before, and it's not one of those things like, oh, I said something like crazy out of that pocket and I probably didn't say it. But my favorite thing about a good OP MC story is they have to have a problem that their strength can't solve, right? One Punch Man, getting your emotions and that fire back, that's not an emotion you can punch away. Misfit of Demon Academy, he has to undo millennia of tweaked history and prejudice against him. That's not something that his powers can. We've seen he's still struggling, like, okay, how do I handle this? His powers don't solve his core problem, but it solves all other problems.
I think it's just you gotta be OP but have a quirk that makes you like still enjoyable.
We gotta watch out with the quirk thing though, and I'm not talking about My Hero now. Okay, hold on a second, real quick. A quirk could make it doubly as annoying. I feel like an OP character that knows it is really hard to pull off with any kind of
tact. I wouldn't say knowing your OP is a quirk.
Maybe you're, I don't know, being a dickhead is a quirk. And if you're a dickhead and an OP character, he's just, but that's how he shows his affection. I don't know. I don't know. Kirito from Sword Art, I would say his quirk was actually shit, but quantifiable was that his sense of justice was like too true north. It was a little bit like, all right, White Knight almost. I don't know. All I'm saying is that is how you would do a character with OP that's just like, woo, he's got like a weird personality quirk.
Well, because I want to bring up Shadow and the Eminence quickly, because the main character in that show is like obscenely OP too, like potentially to the point where, as far as I've seen, nothing is even like phasing him. Touched him. Like, he has not been tagged yet.
Wow.
Unless it was on purpose.
Okay.
But he's got this whole thing where he wants to be like, in his real life, he wants to be as much the background character as he can. So much so that he's developed 27 like different forms of like getting beat. It's like, you recall from Love After World Domination, the dad has all those like forms of like...
of like dying with Flash. Yes.
Dying with Flash. In the main character in Shadow of the Eminence in his real life has those as well. Like, so much so that he, like...
Oh, I see.
They didn't really explain how he did it. 13,
backflip.
Yeah, get stabbed, blow a lot of blood everywhere, and backflip into a wall.
Perfect. Great combo.
Right, and so there's this one episode where he just, like, gets destroyed over and over again in, like, flasher and flasher ways, but still gets up, and he's like, I'm not done yet.
Perfect.
And he has his internal monologue. He's like, I'm not going to finish this until I got all 27 methods. So it's like, you got to be like, I think that's a quirk, though, where it would be like, that's funny. You know what I mean?
Right. And I think that makes it a little interesting too, is that like he's almost using his talent, his gifts, his power in that show to sort of solve his problem. To be able to fall with grace like that, is you have to be like, look at how much work he's putting in to faking it.
Yeah.
How much mental effort. And when he actually has to go out and do his thing at night, balls to the wall, to your point, he hasn't been tagged yet. Yeah, he's a fucking natural. So I think that, okay, that's an interesting thing, is where, like, again, kind of along the same lines, his core problem is mental anguish. Is like the funny part of that is he's trying to look like a fucking dweeb dude, like absolute mid in real life.
He like picked best friends based on who would be like the most background character-y best friends.
So that's okay. This is okay. This is fucking funny.
Yeah, it's just like to do OP characters, there has to be some meme about it.
Yeah. To your point. That you ask me, is there a flat OP character that it just like exists and just plays it straight? I mean, Misfits kind of close, but even they have an interesting world building quirk to it, where he can't undo that. But playing the OP thing straight is not, I don't think, necessarily even in of itself bad. It's like, They almost kind of do it straight up here in, Immortal King. They play that OP guy just super straight, but he is, and there's no lie in him. He knows he's OP. His parents know he's OP. He can destroy the world. Cool. But the element there is like, he doesn't, I don't know if he has a quirk. He has like a restriction, a risk.
Yeah.
Right? He's, because like we just said, he's muted. He's basically as flat as it gets. Does that in of itself constitute? I guess it would be. It's situational. It's not necessarily has to be personal or character driven, you know?
I think his quirk is that, like, he knows no matter what's going to go down, that, like, he can take care of it.
He's like, I'm cool with it, guys.
So there's, situations that arise that are like, oh, my God, everyone in the city's freaking out, and he's just, like, strolling around eating his ramen or whatever out of his little baggie.
He does like dry ramen. I respect the guy for that. It's pretty interesting.
So evidently, after he puts on his amulet, it's the only thing that he can like taste, like that texture. That's why he still eats it.
Oh, is this another thing? Should I have known that from season one?
He may have mentioned it.
Okay. All right. And then now we're getting to that point where my opinion is almost nearly flipped. I think you're fucking right. I go back to these details in the show, right? They're so, like, when put under a microscope, it's not like, oh, they're bad or they break down. It's just that it's very scatterbrained. Like, the whole thing with the 49th and 50th, I want to say, faction.
Yeah, yeah.
Odd. Questions. Just so many questions. One, why? Why? If there's 50 factions and they just have this random tournament between two schools, you would think there'd be some kind of, like, moderator, wasn't it like graded or something, or was it just like an exhibition?
It was an exhibition.
It was just like an exhibition. Okay.
To show like which of the schools is producing better swords people so that the new like elite will go to that school.
Oh, it's a PR move.
Yes.
PR move. Got it. Actually, again, maybe I missed that stuff. I don't know. Maybe I was just enamored by the tournament arc essentially, but
yeah, I don't know. It's very, very hard to talk about this show, and you've noticed this has probably been one of our messiest episodes of all time, I would think.
I don't think it's that messy.
I think it's messy just because you have to jump around so much that you then emulate the show.
Right. Wait, we are becoming what it kind of feels like to watch it.
Yeah.
But again, it's not even really that bad of a thing because just how fun it is to watch.
It's just unbelievably enjoyable.
Yes. Shift all, like, it's the characters are great. If you like your shonen stuff, oh, it's here, it's fun. It's a little, and it feels a little bit, if you're a big anime fan, a little off in a good way. Like, we talked a bit there about, like, kind of the Chinese differences in the way that they inject their mythos, like Japanese cartoons and, excuse me, anime, do for their, or have always done for their animation. But honestly, maybe that twinge of difference kind of gave me a little bit of extra, like, this is... Something about this is like off in a good, like this is new. It feels a little bit of a shimmer there from a narrative standpoint. And the shimmer might actually be the feeling of getting hit on the head repeatedly with different story beats, and you're just like, wait, this doesn't feel linear.
Well, I think there's that, but it's also like it literally cannot feel stale because they don't stick to any like arc.
Amazing. Yeah.
Like within episodes all that much. There's like an overarching thing that's like not that big of a deal until it is. You know what I mean? Like
they
drop the hints for what you need to be kind of worried about. But it's also like every episode is so random that it's like, I can't really be like,
before you can ask, wait, what? They're on to the next thing.
It's like Fooly Cooly a little bit.
Bro.
Shit is like an acid trip.
Yes, but
like, there's still like a point to it.
There's a point. You're not completely lost, but you are definitely like, is this the way we turned on this path? We're still on the right way. Yeah, okay. Well, follow the GPS. Fucking follow the GPS. And you're never wrong.
She's telling me to turn right, and there's a fucking lake there.
Yeah, you do arrive at your destination, but you will not know the names of the roads.
But you need an amphibian vehicle.
Yes,
amphibian
you will need at least land, air, or sea, two of the three. So you have to do at least those two to get through the end of this narrative. So I don't know. End of the day, I had a really good time with the fucking show. I mean, like,
You said you had read this previously.
I swear I thought I did. I went and looked at where I got this from anything. I wonder if there was like a manhwa or something that like adapted this, because I remember scrolling it, but it's from a light novel. So I'm still on the hunt for that, because I know, I remember even seeing like Song Wong come on screen, like, oh yeah, she's like the popular girl and like she has like this power and stuff. I'm like, I texted you, Ethan. I know it's gonna sound fucking crazy, but I swear I consumed this narrative before. I've seen this. And it was just up to 15. Because I remember that being the last thing. And I couldn't have watched it.
I thought we had already talked about season one at some point.
I don't know if we ever did like an ep like this though.
Right. I don't know.
Maybe we did. I don't know. And it was, okay.
And if we did, this is really just an episode about how do you make an OP character good? And also, why are Chinese shows so hard to follow?
So hard to follow, yeah.
It doesn't matter.
The episode, it doesn't matter. They're really, really fucking fun. Admittedly, this coming out in winter 2020 could have something to do with that. That was peak Void era, and I do not... There's a whole mess of memories that are just gone there.
That's true. It was Void era.
It was Void era. So maybe I consumed it in some kind of haze of sorts, and it's gone now. But again...
And I will say a shining kind of crown jewel for all Chinese shows seems to be like their fight scenes are unfucking believable.
It's the choreography I noticed.
Yeah, it's unreal.
It's really, really good understanding. And I'm trying to... I want to go back and watch some of them. Are they more... I don't even think they're like more frames. Some of them are beautiful and a lot more Sakuga, but man, when they do Sakuga, man, it almost feels like it's just like a different take on the concept of fluidity. They're willing to do some other things that maybe Japanese studios traditionally wouldn't. Yeah.
It feels like they just have obscene budgets. Because every fight feels like that fight when Madara's just like taijutsuing the allied army.
I wonder it might be too. I noticed that even within there, the styles were quite different. What if they are crowdsourcing more of that kind of stuff? I mean, like, people like to keep it in-house, pay their employees at Japanese established studios. And if you have something that is like Bilibili, like licensed, and you have it produced by probably, I'd argue, one of the bigger Chinese studios, you could probably pull like, hey, we're doing this thing and people love season one. Let's just keep going. But do you think, is season one the most beautiful of the three seasons visually? Is there more to look forward to if someone just saw... Because the third season had just come out, right? Or there's just started?
It's like 10 in.
Okay. So people may have seen season one and two.
I would say they try so much like different visual stuff in season two. To where I wouldn't say it was like really all that fight based.
Okay.
It was more like, let's just try random, like, I don't know, scene direction.
Let's get fucking weird with it.
Like, kind of like literally, let's get weird with it and see what happens.
A little fun doing some off model shit, dude.
Like, really? And then like this season currently, season three, seems to be like, let's progress the story a little bit.
Okay. Yeah. We had our fun.
Yeah.
Now let's do both.
Yeah, exactly.
Now we can do both. But yeah, I'm excited. I'm going to keep going with it. Cause again, it's an exceptionally bingeable. so unbelievably
They're like really
bingeable.
Short. They got to be sub 18 minutes.
Yeah, I think the longest one is the finale that I watched, which was 21 minutes, which is already short of an actual, like, typical 23. So, in light of all of the, despite it being scatterbrained, completely enjoyable time, I want to say 80. I was going to say 80, but I'm going to say 79. 79, you know, world-ending calamity boys out of 100.
I forget what the hell he eats. It's a cute fucking name. It's like raccoon chips or something.
Oh, the actual snack that he's got. Yeah. It's like raccoon ramen or something. It's like dry
it's
ramen.
It's fucking cute as hell.
It is adorable.
I mean, I've watched more, so I don't want to just like limit myself here.
No one was asking you to. I won't give me the. Give
I
me
think
the full
it's
number.
Like honestly, it's something that when it comes out, I watch it pretty quick. Right.
That's
like,
always a good indicator.
It's a very good indicator. It's a show that they could do like 1,000 seasons, and if it just like sort of follows this trajectory, I'm good.
We don't even really know where we're going in the moment of that trajectory.
Yeah, I mean,
so
like,
fuck
I
it.
Don't give a fuck. So, like, I would give it an 85.
Damn. Okay. And this is, I was kind of hoping for that because what this tells me is it grows on you. It must, right?
Yeah.
So, I was
much better than Psyche K did.
Okay. And that is a huge endorsement for me.
Because I think Psyche K's first season was its best, and then it just like,
this is taking that opposite trajectory. So, I mean, would I give it an 80? Yeah. I think from what I saw, it was a really fun ride. It's something that I think I would need to take in more of it to have a lasting impression. But that is like a linear promise of engagement, right? Is that the more you watch, the more you're going to walk away like positively, more positively. Perfect correlation. So, okay, shit, I'm gonna go watch it probably after we do this.
And the season two has like an unbelievable OP.
You were saying that. I haven't gotten there yet, so that I might just even just pop it on just to see how that's going.
It's got this like sort of like horror slash like Chinese rap. I was really into Chinese rap like not too long ago.
This is newish information. Did I know this?
No, you didn't.
Okay, cool.
Nobody knew this. And this guy, whoever it is, I think it's like Liam or something.
Okay.
Very good.
All right. Do you do a little follow-up lookup for
him?
Oh,
it's on Spotify, buddy.
Oh, shit, yeah. All right. Now I'm going to go watch that shit. But yeah, honestly, go watch it. It's on Netflix. It is stupid easy to binge. It's short. 15 episodes for the first season. I was in and out in like less than 3 hours. It was great. Yeah, overall, this is popcorn shit, but like, really, really good popcorn shit, I would say. And Agreed. It sounds like it only gets better. So, you know what? Thank you.
And like the plot doesn't really matter.
You know what? Thank you for plot sometimes not mattering.
Yeah.
That's important because sometimes I don't want to care. I want to see weird situations with good characters and heavy punches. Fuck it. But yes, thanks y'all for coming to class. If you would like to listen to anything else that we have made, you're already right here on the platform, guys. Like, literally, you're sitting on a gold mine. So just go over 180 episodes at this point of main stuff, and we have a bunch of other stuff that you can listen to that's kind of actually peppered in. I'd like the extra, remember the old extra credits? Those were fun, actually. That was some good pandemic fucking productions.
Actually, this is our 200th upload.
Is this 200th upload?
On Buzzsprout.
Oh, shit, podcasts. Yeah. Well, happy, I guess, 200, kind of. I don't know if that, it doesn't feel, I want the two number 200 in the name, man.
Yeah, I'm just saying it is probably our 200th entry into your feed.
That, I like that. Yeah, 200th time that you've gotten, hey, it's almost not Monday.
These two dorks.
Hey, they spit more shit out. But yeah, if you want to talk to us on more of a, you know, in a crowd of discord folk, you can get in patreon.com/ubology. $1 up, get you into that Discord with all of the past guests and the lovely Patreon folk. $3 up gets you the syllabus sidebar, our lo-fi high vibe, sometimes anime, sometimes not, sometimes visual, and sometimes on hiatus show where we talk about life and things and stuff that maybe sometimes like this one slip in. And maybe we'll just save that mushroom comp. We can save that one for a syllabus sidebar. We can just probably get way too unnecessarily into a mushroom debate. Like, clearly we don't need to be doing that.
Yeah, I mean, it didn't make this episode, so I'm not sure it's gonna
it's ever what the pop. Fan the fans want to know.
It's not gonna pop up like fungi.
It's not gonna pop up like, it's not gonna be fun, my guy, for you. Yeah. Because I think I'm right here.
Yeah.
I'm squarely in the right. But you know what?
He thinks he's a fun guy, but he ain't.
Well, I'm not a fun guy, but I think it's really kind of a mixed bag. And it's not exactly heavy one side of the... You know what? No. If you want to hear the rest of this bullshit, you can go get in the syllabus sidebar and hear us talk about mushrooms or non-mushroom people.
Yeah, who knows?
Who knows? Yep. All the links where you can contact us are in the description or wherever you get this. Like, comment, subscribe, where you do those things. And scene.
What?
Good cut, everybody. Good job. Good job. Yeah.
Deuces.
Production crew. Oh, I wasn't done.
What the fuck is happening?
Until we can thank the cast and crew behind the camera, the dozens of people in this room with us right now.
Right.
I'm Ricky.
And I'm Ethan.
And this has been Weebology.
I'm confused.
Deuces. All right, guys. We can strike. Yeah. Good lighting on you guys.
Good job, guys.
Yeah, a little bit hot on that mic sometimes, but I mean,
yeah,
I think
but,
we
hey,
really, you really reined it in. That's good stuff. Everyone on hat deserves it.